This year, the sea ice in the Arctic Ocean retreated, opening up routes for shipping along almost its entire coast. That could lead to less expensive offshore oil development in the Arctic and shorter, cheaper shipping routes. In this first of a two-part series, Johanna Urich looks at the safety of oil production in icy waters.
The crude oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico has underscored the difficulty of controlling or cleaning up any spill. But it is tougher in the Arctic because of sea ice, and scientists do not have a clear handle on how tough it would be. A lot of the discussion cites the work done in the 70s. It was then that Peter Wadhams did his postdoctoral work, pouring oil under the ice along Canada's coast. In broken ice, he found that the oil piled up on pressure ridges, but it was a different story when it was spilled underneath flat ice.
Put a rubber boom around it and then deliberately covered the bottom of the ice with oil to see what happened, and in fact found that new ice grew underneath the oil and made a sort of oil sandwich.
Of course, all that would change once the ice melted.
After that, it was no longer allowed to spill oil, so you couldn't really study an oil spill in ice because you couldn't do one. So most of our modern understanding of oil in ice comes actually from those experiments done in the 70s.
Engineers who design oil rigs to operate in the Arctic say that cleaning up a spill in the Beaufort and Chukchi Seas would be easier than controlling a blowout in the Gulf of Mexico because the Arctic Ocean is much shallower. There, rigs would be operating on an ocean floor 100 to 150 as opposed to 5,000 feet down. But the best is to keep accidents from happening, and that's where a person like Arno Kananen comes in. Originally from Finland, he spent half of his long career working with state-of-the-art icebreakers, and the last 30 years working with the offshore oil industry. He manages ice by working with groups of icebreakers to break up the ice and keep big icebergs from hitting oil rigs. He did this in the Sakhalin oil field off the Russian coast. He says the reason much of the offshore Arctic development has occurred safely is because the equipment has worked much better than predicted.
The track record is that the operational performance in ice has been systematically exceeded, not only slightly, but with a big margin. The systems have been capable of much more than they were thought. So it shows that actually the designers and planners or operators have been conservative. So far, anyways.
But Kananen says that anyone operating in the Arctic has to understand it is all pioneering work and difficult, if not impossible, to regulate.
In today's world, every single ice offshore operation is a pioneering operation. You don't go there with assuming that you know everything and just start and operate and nothing is going to be surprising you. It's possible to make sure that there's layers of safety built into the system. What is how safe? To me, this is one of the essential things about the success of the Arctic future, is that no oil company should be allowed to take risks which can spoil the whole future of the Arctic operation for everybody.
In Alaska, many say the risk is too big. National environmental groups have made a battleground political issue out of it. They point to the lack of icebreakers. Of the three owned by the U.S. Coast Guard, two are so old they spend most of their time in dry dock getting repairs. And one is a research vessel, not the kind of working ships that routinely ply icy Russian waters. Walt Parker, a U.S. delegate to the Arctic Council and longtime Alaskan, spent most of a week recently listening to the best Arctic marine architects and engineers from around the world talking about their latest research and designs. He sees no real advance in spill response in over 20 years.
You know, if the United States wants to commit to going to get that 23 billion barrels of oil that are in the Chukchi and the Beaufort, why they'd better start spending some money on research and start spending some money on support equipment like icebreakers and make sure the industry does it, one of the two. I still haven't seen any real response out of the administration on the lack of research that I pointed out in 09.
Parker says there's no indication that Congress is committed to building more icebreakers. The risks that opponents of offshore oil drilling speak of rarely include the risk posed by the annual spring runoff to offshore Arctic pipelines. It's called strudel scour. David Dickens with Chevron's Arctic Center in Calgary has just made a 13-year database mapping strudel scours along the coast from a bay near Point Barrow to Kaktovik.
And so these pipelines are vulnerable in shallow water to these features called strudel, where you only have to imagine drainage in your own bathtub and watching the water go down, magnify that 1,000 times, and you've got a strudel scour. And you think of the water being maybe 10 or 15 feet deep, and the drainage is so violent even that it reaches right down to the bottom, to the seabed, and it gouges out a pit in the bottom, in the mud. And some of these pits can be over 10 feet deep. So if you have a pipeline running through there, of course, people have to be concerned about it, because it could actually, the fill that goes in the trench after the pipeline is buried could be dug away by these strudel scours.
These scours will become more of a major issue as pipelines reach out to offshore gravel islands housing drilling operations. It's not possible to bury the pipes deep enough to escape scouring, so oil companies have to go out every spring and check on the pipe, reburying and maintaining it as needed. Some hope that the problem will disappear as more ice melts in the coming decades, opening up the possibility of increased shipping in the Arctic. More on this tomorrow. I'm Johanna Urich.